All righty, we'll get going. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining. And today I wanted to talk all about perimenopause and what perimenopause actually is, because there is so much confusion and so much disinformation out there. There's so much lack of information too. So actually the premise behind the whole womenswellbeing.me site is to be a provider of good information of both conservative approaches and alternative approaches, and obviously lifestyle and yoga approaches to helping us through what can be a very discombobulating phase of life for many women, and can also make us kind of not know who we are anymore and feel very unbalanced. So I thought it'd be helpful just to define, first of all, what menopause is. Menopause is literally a moment in time when there have been 12 months since the last period. So it's a definition of a moment in time when you can track that you haven't had a period for 12 months. And after that moment, you are postmenopausal. And prior to that moment, you are perimenopausal. And perimenopause really does differentiate drastically between different women. And it really doesn't matter what happened to your mom or your sister. All of us are completely unique. And we'll find that some women, their perimenopause symptoms might last, you know, a few months, others up to 12 years. So the general consensus is that around 40, the progesterone starts to drop down. And around 45, the estrogen that your ovaries produces starts to fluctuate and slowly diminish. And then around 51 is the average age here in the UK, it'll be about 12 months since you've had your last period. So that means about 50, you're likely to stop your period. And that's very average. That's the top of the bell curve. So, of course, there's a lot of women who are earlier than that, and there are some women who are later than that. So the ovaries, they start to decline their production of eggs. And as a result of this slow decline, the production of estrogen and progesterone and testosterone starts to fall. And it's the combination of these hormones that regulate our menstrual cycle and also the production of the eggs. A big thing to know is that it is the difference between the progesterone, the levels of progesterone you have in your body, and the levels of estrogen, the differential between those two hormones, that are behind most of our symptoms in that perimenopausal stage. And it's the progesterone that starts to drop off first of all. So often people don't even realize there's no change in their periods at all, but they become more moody, because the progesterone dropping off often has an association with mental changes. And often that is brain fog, moodiness, anxiety, sometimes heart palpitations, and a difficulty to get to sleep or waking up. So progesterone starts to drop off first, and then the estrogen will fluctuate, and it literally fluctuates day by day. So that's why they say that after about 45, which is that kind of average time for the estrogen to start to fluctuate and diminish, tests, blood tests and certainly saliva tests, don't really tell us much at all, because you would need to be doing tests at least twice a week for a good month or a couple of months before you had any kind of idea of what was going on with the fluctuations of the estrogen. So it's those fluctuations of the estrogen as they slowly diminish, and then the differential with the progesterone, which is also dropping, that create the main symptoms. So if you can imagine your progesterone has dropped right off, and you might be quite okay if your estrogen is also relatively low, then as soon as you have a spike, as soon as those ovaries kind of push out a little bit more estrogen, because of course the ovaries are desperately trying to get you potentially pregnant in these last years of potentially being able to have a baby, as soon as you have a spike, you're going to find that those hormones, the differential in the hormones, create more of the symptoms. So I can see that Irina has just joined us. Hi, Irina. I'm going to get you pinned up here with me if I can. Hang on, can I do that? Yes, I think you are there as well. Hi there. And if I unmute you, or if you unmute yourself, my love, can you do that?
Yep. How's that?
Hooray. So everyone, this is Irina Van Zyl, who is an amazing pelvic floor physiotherapist and a women's health expert. And she's become a dear friend of mine because I keep referring people to her. So we've got to know each other pretty well over the years. And thank you so much for joining.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Sorry today. I'm a bit late. I just had to kick somebody out the door.
Not literally.
I want to get them out.
So Irina, I was just doing a little bit of a pre-explanation about what happens with our hormones in the perimenopausal stage, so leading up until the actual menopause. Mm-hmm. I haven't yet got to talking about some of the very, very common symptoms. So maybe if I sort of go through some of the symptoms that people experience, and then I'd love it if we, since we're both sort of pelvic floor orientated, if we could maybe touch more on the vaginal dryness and the atrophy issues with the atrophy and the issues with the bladder, that would be amazing. So like I said, perimenopausal symptoms will often start to be a little bit of a problem around 45 years old. And I have found, and this is just simply my friends and me, that around 47 seems to be a bit of a peak year. 47, 48 seems to be a bit of a peak time for women to experience symptoms such as, and it's not just period changes at all, and it's not just hot flushes at all, although 3 out of 4 women will experience hot flushes of some degree, and also night sweats. So night sweats are sort of considered slightly different from hot flushes, but also mood changes, you know, that like I said before, the swinging moods, the sudden rage, the sudden just, you know, 1 minute a plate dropping out of the dishwasher is no problem. The next day, a plate dropping out of the dishwasher and smashing, just you explode. Oh, that, you know, stack the dishwasher like this. And then it's the, oh my goodness, where did that come from? Like, where did that monster erupt from? And it's the horror that there's this change of personality. So fatigue is another one that we hear about hugely, and poor sleep patterns as well. So an utter lead blanket over your head kind of exhaustion. And even if you think you have slept through the night, it can almost start to not be correlated to actual length of sleep. It's still experiencing this deep exhaustion, and also brain fog, so memory issues, an inability to focus properly. We call it that kind of cotton wool head, where it literally feels like you've got cotton wool in your brain. Low libido, so just total no interest in sex, or suddenly when the estrogen is spiking, a sudden interest in sex and then it dropping off again. Joint pain, so this is a really big one, and I'd love that, Irina, if you talked on this one in a minute, but joint pain and aching and almost that feeling like you've got arthritis is a big one, because estrogen lubricates our joints, and it's a big component of reducing inflammation in the body. A lot of women find that their skin quite rapidly becomes a lot less elastic and their hair is thinning. And again, it's the estrogen which contributes to the regeneration of the collagen, and also the regeneration of our hair follicles as well. A lot of women describe itchiness of their skin, and this is something that I had, just incredible itchiness, crazy itchiness. Sometimes it's like ants are crawling all over your skin.
Yeah, again, just as you're trying to fall asleep.
Yes.
Which you're already not getting enough of, and you're like, oh.
And itchy. And that was a real problem for me for many years. I had no idea. I had no idea it was to do with hormones. So it was interesting. Yeah. If you're a migraine sufferer, they can get a lot worse. And then coming on to the vaginal, bladder, vulva issues, which obviously, because I teach yoga, which really specifically is orientated around pelvic floor and deep core health, and this is obviously an area that Irina is very interested in, we'll talk now a little bit more about the lack of estrogen around the perimenopause and into the postmenopausal years and what that can do for bladder stability. It affects the detrusor muscles of the bladder, so often we have more urge incontinence and urgency, needing the loo suddenly, oh my god, I need the loo now, but also the actual pelvic floor muscles becoming dehydrated, less elastic, itchy, dry, you know, a lot of discomfort there, and inflamed too. So would you mind jumping in here on this?
Bottoms. I think two things that you've already mentioned that I found quite interesting on some training I did quite recently is the effect on the ligaments as well. So they did a study on athletes and they were much more likely to tear their cruciate ligament on the day of their period when you have that sudden sharp drop of estrogen, like with a massive increased incidence. So you're much more likely to injure yourself because of that sudden lack of estrogen in the tissues and that sudden tightening up where you just don't have that elasticity. And it's just that, it's literally from one day to the next. If you think of, you know, what's happening during perimenopause, you can have these fluctuations all the time. So it's no surprise that a lot of the women I see are in their 40s for the muscle aches and pains. They don't even realize that it's related to their hormone levels because of the effect on the ligaments and the muscle tissue and the attachments of that. So of course that then follows through to the pelvic floor, because a lot of the time we sort of think of the pelvic floor as this mystic area because we don't get to see it. So one of the things I try and do is really educate, and in fact I've got a bit of a radical post going out on social media today with an actual drawing of the perineum, because I'm like, we need to know, 44% of women don't know where the vagina is on a diagram. That's crazy.
Irina, could you come a little bit closer to your microphone, because I'm losing you a little bit.
I've got so much stuff on my desk to show you that I'm like away from the laptop.
Just so I'll just clarify that in case you didn't hear, Irina, the perineum, which is, I'm sure you've got a model there, the bit between the vagina and the anus, that little bit, which if you've had an episiotomy was cut, or if you've had a bad tear during delivery, that's the bit that will most likely be affected. Yeah. And once we come to perimenopausal years, these birth traumas, because of the lower estrogen, because of the lack of elasticity around the pelvic floor, they tend to come back up again, don't they, Irina? And
it's not often like a low level of a hormone. It's when it's constantly fluctuating that you're prone to an injury. Now, if we think of pregnancy, you know, you have all this estrogen during pregnancy and suddenly you have birth and then there's no estrogen and you're trying to heal up. And then, of course, menopause, you've got these constant fluctuations. So if you look at this area, so this is what I was saying. I've just had a post go out today with a drawing of this area, because the statistics are showing us that 44% of women can't identify where the vagina is.
Ladies who are listening, please let us know if any of you don't know where your vagina is. And have a look at the...
We should have a little mic somebody needs to answer. So if you're looking at this bit down here, so it's a good idea. I've got a big old mirror in here where patients can have a look at the same time. So what Linda was saying is if you have an episiotomy, they tend to cut you there. And very often if I see tears, they come through all the way there into this muscle here. Or if they tear all the way through to the anus, that's a fourth degree tear when that's all the way through. So that's obviously...
So I'll just repeat, because we're going to put this as an audio as well. So just explaining that Aaron was saying during birth, often an episiotomy or a tear will drop down onto slightly one side of that perineum, the thinnish skin between the vagina and the anus.
The skin, Linda, it's the muscle as well.
And the muscle, yes, as well.
I think that's quite the ligaments. That's sometimes misinformation, yes. I think, even amongst the midwives, unfortunately, where they think when they're cutting, they think they're just cutting through skin, and when they're cutting muscle as well. So that's unfortunate, but hopefully, you know, some more education will sort that out. Sorry, if this is an audio, I've got a lot of visual aids here.
So we'll just need to be very specific when we're talking about visual aids.
So if we're looking at this, the front, if you tilt right through to the front, you've got the clitoris right at the very edge there. And then that little hole there is the urethra. So we're going to talk about prolapse in a minute. The vagina, this is the inner labia, and then you get the outer labia. So sometimes the outer labia is longer and sort of shuts it off, and sometimes the inner labia is longer and the outer labia sits on the side. So all of that's normal. It's not abnormal to have one longer than the other. And then coming through to this here being the anal sphincter. With all these changes, all those structures can change slightly, where they sit can change slightly.
Sorry, my dear love, I'm just thinking, because we're going quite deep into actual birth trauma and issues around the pelvis. And this talk, although I definitely want to do a talk specifically on that, this one's basically on the bigger picture of what perimenopause is. So I might just tap back into some broader umbrella terms here. Okay. And then if we can drop back into slightly deeper. Yeah.
Okay. So what I'm talking about here is the musculoskeletal system in perimenopause as well. Okay. Because it ties together. So if you're looking at that, I'm just going to give you a quick idea. That's just muscles and bones. Can you see?
But again, I think we're probably going too deep into I'm just going to, because this is the first talk just on what is perimenopause. So we won't talk too deeply yet about, So I think it's important. I'm just going to go back to talking about what perimenopause actually is and just alerting the ladies who are listening to the fact that you don't actually need to have any changes in your period to be in perimenopause. I think that's quite an important one, because a lot of women, I know I was like this, thinking that as long as I was having regular periods, then menopause and even this thing called perimenopause is something that's right off down the track. And maybe about 60, I was thinking, I wasn't even aware really of the fact that when you're in your 40s, that is when these big fluctuations of the estrogen and the progesterone are happening. And as you just said before, it's when the ovaries are pumping out that estrogen a lot one day and a lot less the next day. And it's the difference between the progesterone and the estrogen that is making the major problems. So it's incredibly helpful if you are wanting to go to see a specialist about symptoms to have kept a diary. So I have just like a little A5 diary that I keep beside my bed now. And every day I'll just jot down what my energy level was like out of 10 that day. And I just do a little thing. If I've got my period or if I'm just getting some spotting, I'll just make a note of that. I'll also make a note of, brain fog or utter. So some days I'll be absolutely fine. And the next day I'll be crashing exhaustion. You can almost feel the estrogen has just plummeted. So it's helpful to be able to, when you do go and see a doctor, to have some recorded evidence of what is happening over a pattern, and also in making note of things like breast tenderness, joint pain, insomnia, mouth dryness, mood swings, all of the things that you think, that's not me. This is weird. Why is this happening? There's a thing called the Green Climatic Scale, which is have you got one there that you can?
Yeah, I've got one in front of me. So I think that's for me, the most important tool. And as you were saying, Linda, to keep a diary of those symptoms, because I think with perimenopause, it's a bit like whack-a-mole. You know, you have one symptom one day and then the next day it's gone and something else pops up. And I think this is why it does go undiagnosed for so long, because you go to the doctor with the thing that sticks out the most if you're going at all. And then they're not necessarily getting a picture, and you don't necessarily know that actually I'm itching, I'm not sleeping well, my mood's all over the place, but that's not happening necessarily every day, you know. Sometimes I have a hot flush, and some women don't really suffer very badly, so they don't think to go to the doctor and get some help, you know. Or they think they're depressed because stuff's happening in their life, because 40s are quite, you know, you're the squeeze in the middle, you know, get your teenage kids and your aging parents, so you might just think that's, I'm depressed or anxious because my life is hard. Instead of thinking that actually, if you put all those symptoms together and all those moles have popped their heads up on different phases of your month, that you actually recognize they're all the same thing. They're all down to hormone fluctuations or a lack of estrogen or that difference, as you say, between the estrogen and progesterone. So doing a green climacteric score is so important, and actually doing one every month for a few months. I found this quite shocking, and you think it's quite stupid because I'm a women's health physio. When I did my own one, I thought it was way too soon for me to be worrying about this. I had a few like night sweats, and I really never suffered with hot flushes. When I did my score, most of my score was either extremely or quite a bit. And I was really shocked, and I actually had to sit with that for a while going, oh my goodness, how have I missed this? You know, it's guacamole, you know, you literally don't put them together. So I'd highly recommend you download that form for yourself and just go and have a little look. And you might go, actually, I'm better than I thought I was, just because this one symptom is really bad. You know, maybe I'm still good on all the others. You know, I think it's worth knowing.
And it's also important to realize that estrogen in particular, there are about 400 different pathways in the body that estrogen affects. So things like we were just describing, the itchy skin, I had no idea that estrogen was so crucial in the elasticity of the muscle fibers, not just muscle fibers, but the skin, the collagen in the skin, and that this itchiness that I was experiencing randomly sometimes, not even sometimes associated with something I'd eaten, if I'd had a drink or had a curry, for example, if I had too much coffee or sugar, then I would have more of a spike with the itchiness. But sometimes no real food correlation. And obviously now I realize it was simply my cycle, where I was obviously depleted in estrogen on that night. and that's why I was having the itchiness more. A lot of women, their very first symptoms, or the first time they maybe clock that their hormones might be fluctuating, might be starting to diminish, are things like a little bit of urgency, or suddenly going for a run. Maybe they've always been a runner, but suddenly leaking, having a bit of stress incontinence. So, Irina, could you just talk about the estriol in the pelvic bowl and what happens with
I think you've really covered that to a large degree, but it is about those muscles, the strength in the muscles, because estrogen is an anabolic steroid, so it actually builds muscle in your body. So the less estrogen that you have, the less likely you are to have strength in your muscles as well. And then, you know, as you were saying, all the metabolic processes, it helps the things to glide and slide. It keeps the connective tissue nice and mobile, the ligaments nice and mobile. But it does add to the strength of the muscle. So if you're looking at that model I showed you before, where it's just skeletal muscle, it's no different to the muscles in your arms and legs. It's just working to support. Now suddenly you're taking away a lot of the strength and the tissue through the ligaments, you know, you suddenly have this kind of drop through the pelvis. And particularly when, you know, you've had your kids and you've had them quite late, you tend to have a bit more of a problem, I find. You know, the younger you are, the more you bounce back, because you've got time to strengthen them. You know, you're like in your 20s. I saw a 28-year-old the other day, and she was like amazing. And I thought, I'd never see them so young, because they come with problems in their late 30s and 40s because they've had their kids then, you know. So then they're in perimenopause, as well as having postnatal issues, which they may not never have addressed. So the muscles are now suddenly just letting go. So now you get the prolapses where, you know, as I showed you on my little model earlier, the urethra might start peeking out a little bit, and that can be really bothersome, because it feels awful. It feels like you've got a tampon that's not sitting properly. And that tends to be one of the least serious, you know, prolapses, but the one that feels the most uncomfortable. You could have the bladder descend down a bit, and that can give you, again, as you say, the urgency or leaking.
I'll just jump in, Irina, with just the explanation on prolapse, what actually prolapse organ or organs are, and why they happen in perimenopause, when potentially at least the symptoms haven't been problematic until the estrogen starts to drop in that perimenopausal stage.
It's down to the musculature not being as strong, because the estrogen's not there to build the muscle. You have to work so much harder on your pelvic floor exercises to keep that strength there. Make sure you're eating foods that are high in phytoestrogens, so you get that in the diet as well, if you're not on HRT already. But even then, I'd suggest you make sure your foods are high in good quality fiber, estrogen, like a tofu and your soya bean foods, just to keep the musculature tight and firm as well. So that if you're looking at your different organs that can prolapse, you've got the urethra, which is just really a channel. You've got your bladder, which would be an anterior wall prolapse because it sits on the front of the vagina. And then you've got your rectum, which sits in the posterior wall that can prolapse forward into the posterior vaginal wall. And then you've got your urethra, your uterus that can descend, so you can actually feel the cervix. So if you're doing an exam on yourself and you can feel organs popping out, and you're doing a pelvic floor contraction, can you feel them lift back up or can't you? So just about knowing your own anatomy, feeling if those muscles are actually contracting. And you can do that even with your hand outside on your perineum, just resting your hand. So for those of you that can see, if you just rest your hand literally in the space from the vagina to the anus and breathing in and out, can you feel a movement? You know, as you breathe in, does it go down? As you breathe out, does it come up? And then as you do a contraction on the outbreath, does it lift properly? So that gives you an idea of what's that strength like. You know, if you're not feeling much of a strength and you're having all these other symptoms, is there an issue with your estrogen? And also understanding that your sphincters, as your estrogen and as you get older, your estrogen is not feeding those tissues as well. So instead of the sphincter being tight, it starts opening up because there's just not enough bulk to it. And sometimes just a local estrogen can be good enough to start lubricating those tissues. Yeah, that's my favorite product, Avestin. And that goes right into the, you've got it upside down for me anyway. There you go. And that can go right into
it. I've used it.
I've been brand new tube upstairs.
this stuff here, Avestin cream, is an estriol. So there are three different types of estrogen that we produce. And the estriol is what is most predominant around the whole pelvic area. Yeah. And even if you're not using HRT, which I've just got some boxes here of systemic, which means it goes through your bloodstream, HRT, you can use this very, very, very low dose topical cream in the vagina around the perineum that Alreen was talking about before, where a lot of us have had episiotomies or tears during birth, around the sphincter muscle of the urethra to help it be plumped up and close more easily around the anus. So this stuff can be used topically. It's so low dose, it does not go into the bloodstream. It will not affect any of the other symptoms that you might experience during perineum.
And therefore is also safer from a risk, very if you're looking safe at risk, not... whole different talk.
It is.
But having that Avestin in there, and I often, you know, offer this to patients who don't even have any other symptoms, but they're leaking because it can just help to get that sphincter to close properly. So, you know, when the sphincter does its job, it's actually shutting properly because it has the bulk to it. There's loads of reasons for atrophy down there. Obviously, estrogen is the main thing, but, you know, just weakness and so on. So, but estrogen is going to be your big hitter. And if you,
it's a gold standard, isn't it, between what you do and kind of what I do in my classes of teaching proper muscle control and how to strengthen and bulk up the pelvic floor muscles and especially the sphincter muscles, and we work and I know you work deeper into the pelvic bowl, into the levator ani, so into the whole band of muscle that holds the organs in place. And obviously making sure that the muscles around the pelvis, the bum muscles in particular, are strong to help to hold everything in place. So that's one thing. But by also supplementing with estrogen, that's kind of considered the gold standard, as well as bowel health. You can't be constipated and then expect yourself not to also have urinary incontinence because everything's so mushed together in that pelvis, everything's all squashed in together, that if you've got a big stuffed full rectum, it's going to probably make the detrusor muscles of your bladder unstable, and that makes your sphincter muscle of your urethra open up inappropriately.
Do you want me to show them
my visuals, my hand?
Do you want me to show them a little model, or shall I not bother, of what's fitting in there?
So ladies, I'll tell you what, we might just do a little bit more of a general thing on what is perimenopause. And okay. Then if we've got some questions specifically around organ prolapse, then maybe we can do the model. So I might just touch on what is available here in the UK as far as HRT. And just because I think, I know when I was 45, 46, 47, I thought HRT was the pharmaceutical companies, the patriarchy trying to kind of put something on me. And as a yoga teacher, I wanted to do things naturally. And I just, it was just simply not in my remit to even think about HRT. Unfortunately, here in the UK, in fact, worldwide, GPs do not get training on perimenopause and all the symptoms that we've been talking about in medical school. So GPs have to go on and do specific training in order to kind of know all of this stuff. So that's why we find that most doctors who have done all this extra training end up going private, because the NHS just simply doesn't provide the time that's needed for women to properly go through their own history and all of their symptoms. But it's really important to know that your GPs can prescribe body identical HRT. And I just quickly say the difference between old style synthetic HRT, the stuff that was available for our mothers, is very different from the new style HRT. The new style HRT is, it's made out of wild yam, basically. So it's the old style, the synthetic stuff, was generally derived from horses' urine, so concentrated mare's urine. And I like to describe it as like a key that would turn the lock, but didn't actually fit the lock properly. Whereas the body identical stuff that we can get on the NHS here in England is derived from wild yam, and it is turned in the lab to be exactly the same molecular structure as what our ovaries produce or did produce. But as we go through perimenopause and into the menopause, they, you know, the production is lowered and lowered and lowered until there is no estrogen and progesterone and testosterone from the ovaries anymore. And therefore, it's way safer. It doesn't have any association with blood clots. It's much, 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 much smaller, almost minuscule association with an increased risk of breast cancer. And it's actually shown to be preventative for a lot of the degenerative disorders associated with a lack of estrogen, such as dementia, because our brains are female brains are very, very estrogen rich. And the incidence of women getting dementia and Alzheimer's is way higher than men until men's testosterone starts to dip, which tends to be about 70 for them. But after about 50 for women, and our estrogen is dropping, that's when we tend to be a lot more susceptible to mental issues. Similarly with bones, so 1 in 2 women over 50 will get osteoporosis. And it's because the estrogen is absolutely crucial in the regeneration of our bones. Heart health as well, which is why I do so much twists and movement in yoga to keep the thoracic area, the midsection, really mobile, is because the arterial health, the arteries, the pliability of the arteries, which is very affected by our estrogen levels, is also affected by how much we move. So you'll probably notice as women get older, you can see there's a stiffness in the upper backs area. There's a much more of a rigidness, and that is very much related to a higher incidence of heart disease, which is actually the number one killer of women. It's not breast cancer. Breast cancer is like number 7 or 8. So the things that we're most concerned about really as we age are kind of losing our marbles, you know, the Alzheimer's, the dementia, osteoporosis, which can lead to death because of fractures and then long stays in hospital, obviously heart issues. And then for us ladies, one of the biggest problems is pelvic dysfunction, so leaking. So one of the main reasons women go into nursing homes is because of incontinence, And the main reason why women stay in nursing homes is incontinence. And you cannot put off looking after your pelvic floor. It's not something you want to start doing in your 70s. It's something you have to start doing, just like brushing your teeth. It cannot be like, oh, I've done it once. That'll do for this year. I'll think about it again later. You have to brush your teeth every day. So, Alrena, do you want to add anything to that little summary about?
I think I just come back to the HRT you were talking about and the bioidentical and body identical and all of that, because I think there's quite a lot of confusion about that out there. Mm. And there's quite a lot of people making quite a lot of money from vulnerable women and scaring them about body identical hormones and the risks associated to them. And I think you've put that quite well. So the study that we see and that you see keep seeing regurgitated in the press was years ago, and they did it on the worst way of possibly doing HRT for somebody. So using a synthetic progestogen, which is different to a progesterone that you would be getting now. The one that they've got there now is a body identical one available on the NHS and safe to take, whereas a synthetic progestogen like you get in the pill or in the Mirena coil even, or the ones that were done on the study that you'll see that links to breast cancer, that was what they used. And they also used an oral estrogen, which increases your risk of clots and obviously therefore strokes and heart attacks, as opposed to something that's transdermal like a patch or a gel. So that's a gel that has got there. Or you can get a patch. And those are also body identical estradiol. Estradiol, am I right?
So if you guys note that the pelvic area is estriol rich, the rest of the body needs estradiol. So that's why the cream that you put on your vagina, that's estriol. That's not going to help your hot flushes or your joint pain or anything like that. However, the estradiol, which I've got here is a gel, which I just put on my skin, this stuff, it doesn't go through your liver like a pill. So it's the synthetic stuff has to take as a pill. This doesn't go through your liver. And because it's body identical, because it is the same molecular structure as our own estrogen that our ovaries have produced, it will help with all the problems associated with a declining or lack of estrogen.
Yeah. And I must say personally, what I really like about the gel is that if you're still in perimenopause and you know your body quite well, you can fluctuate yourself. You can feel some days I need a bit more and some days I need a bit less, and got a bit of breast tenderness, you probably need a bit less. And if you've got a bit of a mood thing going on, you probably need a bit more. If you've still got a fairly regular cycle, you can really, you know, see what your body naturally would have done with estrogen, and you drop on those days. And if it's a low estrogen day, you can up, so you get more of an even rather than these big old spikes. So that's just on a personal point. But I think understanding that when you go and look on the press, what you're going to see is like, oh, you know, HRT increases your breast cancer risk. And I think it was one in, was it 2 in 1,000 women that got breast cancer on that study, first of all. But secondly, actually, with if you're on body identical, one we're talking about, your risk is actually lower and you're far more likely to survive breast cancer if you're on HRT than if you are not.
And so also, it's interesting I was just going to jump in there because the study that Arena is talking about, the Women's Health Initiative, which came out in 2002, and there's another one in 2003, they used the average age of the woman in that study was 60. So we were already in a demographic where heart disease and cancer is much more likely. And they use very high doses of the synthetic estrogen, which is really not used very much anymore at all.
Well, you'd be surprised. I still see it used. I still have patients come in that are on it, you know, when their GPs just didn't know any better, or they were put on it 10 years ago and they just haven't educated themselves, or the GP hasn't. So, and also you sort of, I think for GPs, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, if she's the lady seems okay and she's happy, you know, so I often have patients change if they're willing to, you know, do a few weeks of figuring it out. But I'm just going to read off a slide here that of a course I did recently, the risks of not taking HRT, poorer quality of life. So general ill health in the majority, more insomnia, more vasomotor, which is your hot flushes and your night sweats, symptoms, more joint symptoms, more mood symptoms, palpitation symptoms, and obviously all the skin, and as Linda was talking about, the leaking, and that obviously is going to have a massive effect on the quality of life. Impaired cognition. So if you look at scans, functional MRIs on a lady in her prime, a perimenopausal woman and a postmenopausal woman, and you look at the what's firing in the brain, it literally goes from like 100% of the brain lighting up to 60% of the brain lighting up to 30% of the brain lighting up. So we can see why 40% of women actually leave the workforce because of cognition issues, because they just can't do the jobs they did before. Now imagine you're in an ether system, you're struggling with, you know, memory issues, you can't remember the dose of something, or a nurse, or, you know, obviously that's close to my heart, but it could be in any job. Imagine you're an engineer and that bridge measurements depends on you functioning at 100%, and suddenly you're functioning at 30%, you know, in terms of what you have in your, what availability you have in your brain. Increased osteoporosis and joint pains. And I actually think, besides the strengthening effect, and we know the studies show us that estrogen rebuilds the bones, that's one of the big reasons for HRT, is to stop these osteoporotic issues. But a lot of women are not exercising because they leak. So they don't have the confidence to go and exercise, so they're not doing the weight-bearing exercises. So therefore they get the osteoporosis and the sarcopenia, which is muscle loss. You know, and then you add to that the loss because of the estrogen, which is the problem in the first place. And now you get the fragility fracture that lands you up in hospital, or now you get the weight gain that gives you the cardiovascular disease. So you can just see how that, you know, pathway leads from that very first incidence of a lack of estrogen and you leaking to all the other things as well.
And that's one of the major, what you're talking about now. I think when you get to this age, and especially if a lot of things are starting to happen all at once and you don't know what is going on, because golly, I mean, even us, we were, you know, working in this field, we didn't even know what was going on with our own bodies. It's so confusing. And then if you go to a doctor and they're like, well, you're obviously depressed, we'll just put you on antidepressants. And don't know about all the different things that can happen when your estrogen is dropping, or they know about the problems, but they're still relating to that 2002 study, still thinking that's, you know, no one should take HRT because it will cause you breast cancer. And still to this day, a lot of doctors will say that, and it's simply not true. And this is what we've really got to get out there, that there's a lot you can do lifestyle wise, which we must do in midlife. It is simply, you cannot carry on like we were in our 20s and 30s. And until we get that, I think we're going to still keep trying to be men in skirts and still try to keep pushing through. Yeah. And so, yes, there's a lot of things we can do lifestyle wise, and we will touch on those. But a big thing is to not be scared about the new style body identical HRT. And we're very, very lucky in the UK that you can get, it's basically bioidentical stuff, which is then regulated and licensed. And so you know that this tube or this packet or this pump has exactly what it says on the box in there.
Yeah. And yeah, it's rather all than the bioidenticals.
That's right.
That aren't regulated, which is unfortunate.
That is one thing that's important, isn't it? To realize that bioidentical and body identical, they're both made out of wild yams. They're both molecularly the same as what we produce ourselves. So that is the good guys, it's the good stuff, what you want. However, the bioidentical, which you can only get if you go privately, is compounded per person in a compounding pharmacy. We don't, there's no, because it's not regulated, because it's not overseen, you don't actually know what you're getting in the tube. And it's also ridiculously expensive. I know women who spend hundreds and hundreds of pounds
each month
on this bioidentical stuff. Mm. And when you can get the same stuff, but it is regulated and it is licensed and it is, we know it's safe on the NHS for 11 quid a prescription, as opposed to hundreds of pounds for a prescription. It's like, why are doctors not telling us this?
Well, I think it's also about inclusivity. You know, if 50% of the population female, you know, and, you know, surely this should just be something that is done. Yeah. And it's not just for the 0.01% who can afford to go see a doctor in Harley Street that's doing bioidenticals and can pay, £1,000 for the consultation and then all the blood tests, and then it all has to be done again and again. And I mean, I've got women who do this, you know, and then they say to me, one of them actually came in recently and she was like, I can't afford to go see the specialist because I haven't worked for the last year because my business has been affected by COVID. So now she can't have her HRT because she can't afford to go see the specialist because it's, and she can't afford her supplements every month, you know. That's ridiculous. You know, it's not like when you have diabetes that you can suddenly go, actually, I can't afford my insulin this month. So, you know,
yeah.
It's not okay. You know, every single woman, if she's lucky enough, is going to go through menopause, if she's lucky enough to get to that age. So there should be better provision.
Well, actually, that you touched on a very important point in that up until 100 years ago, or less than 100 years ago, people on average didn't live to 55, 60. We basically would go through menopause and would die. So you didn't have people living, women living for another 30, 40, 50 years after going through the point where our ovaries don't produce these vital, very, very important components to the body functioning properly. But our medical knowledge, our general medical knowledge hasn't kind of caught up. And so it's really
it hasn't filtered down yet. And I think, you know, just looking at the rest of the risk of HRT, you know, osteoporosis, joint pains, heart disease, as you said, heart attack risk, that's the risk if you don't have any estrogen, increased bowel cancer risk, increased breast mortality cancer risk, and actually a higher all-cause mortality risk. I think your all-cause mortality drops with a third if you're on HRT. So the NICE guidelines, which is what we have to pay attention to as medical professionals, is, you know, these are the clinical standards of excellence. This is what all the research and peer-reviewed studies have done. They are saying individualize the treatment. Don't just treat everybody with the same drug, you know, or the same dosage. And as we talked about, you can even regulate on your own if you understand your own body a bit better about how much do you need on certain days and other days. So individualize the treatment. Use whatever dose works. So making sure that you're not just looking at hot flushes and night sweats, because women are going, yeah, oh no, my menopause was fine. I didn't have any hot flushes or night sweats. But in the meantime, they had such risk of all the other things because they didn't actually have symptoms that they could ascribe to the menopause because they didn't know that their mood swings.
No.
They didn't know that their joints aches and pains. And they didn't know that the dryness in the mouth and the pressure in the head and all of that was all related. It's a minimal risk of breast cancer. It's best for bones and joints, best for quality of life, prevents heart attacks, and also not to stop. Because women will often say, oh, I just want to stay on it until I'm through the menopause and then stop. But as long as you're on HRT, you're actually getting a protective effect on the heart, protective effects against cancer, and protective effects against muscle loss and bone density loss, which obviously leads to a longer, healthier life and having more life in your years. You know, it's one thing to live to 90, but are you actually still alive, or are you just sitting in a nursing home from 75 to 90 peeing yourself, you know?
Which it doesn't paint a great picture, does it?
Sorry, it just doesn't. I'd rather not be around for that, you know. So
yeah, it's I think it is really important though to also realize that when we get into midlife, there is an awful lot we can do to help our bodies still produce some hormones. So once the ovaries switch off, basically, once we've gone through menopause, our adrenals and our brain, even our spleen, so other organs do still continue to produce progesterone and estrogen and to a certain extent testosterone, but we need to support them to produce this very, very essential little bit of hormones as much as possible. And it's crucial to eat really well. So start reducing carbs and things, white carbs, and really up the green vegetables, the good fiber, to get the bowel working really well. And we won't go into the whole scientific details of what happens with estrogen and recirculating estrogen, and that can be for another talk. However, bowel health really, really important. And so is calming the adrenals, which is why in the women's wellbeing space I've created the chill out tent. So there is a place that if you are feeling revved, you can go and do a restorative yoga practice, you can go and listen to a guided meditation. I always try and add a guided meditation into my yoga classes, because when we are in fight and flight, when we are revved, which to be honest most of us are a lot of the time on our phones, even just tapping on our phones revs and lights up part of our brains and gets our adrenals pumping out cortisol. So when we're pumping out cortisol, our poor adrenals simply cannot produce the progesterone and the estrogen that they might produce if we were just a bit more chilled. And to be fair, I know that I'm probably somebody who experienced more severe perimenopausal symptoms because I am a bit of a rev head. I am a bit of a, you know, I am quite an A-type personality, and I've got friends who are naturally very chilled out and they've had a much calmer time through perimenopause. And I can kind of, you know, when I meet, I can kind of tell who's likely to have, at least, you know, so for me, part of my recovery from having a perimenopausal induced burnout really was really learning how to calm my adrenals right down. So there's an awful lot of stuff you can do with yoga, with mindfulness, with visualization, with breath work. Breath work can really help with hot flushes as well. So I try and teach a lot of these techniques in classes, taking regular exercise. And obviously we want to be doing bone strengthening exercise, so weight bearing, which is why in yoga I do also do a lot of squats, side planks, weight bearing through the wrists, that all the bits, all the joints that can become a lot more brittle and less lubricated and less strong. And if you are going to have a fall, it's probably, you know, those areas that are going to break. So the weight bearing, just so important. And what our gut health is the other thing. Gut health, oh my God, so important that we have a good gut biome. Also in the vagina, you want to have good vaginal, which is another reason to use the old Ovestin. That's going to help with thrush and all the rest of it, and recurrent UTIs that really helps just balance the pH around the vagina and the bladder.
But also knowing just how your gut health is so important for your mental health and understanding that relationship as well, because most of your serotonin is made in your gut. So if your gut health is not good, you're not going to have enough serotonin to feel good. So that's such a key thing, getting that microbiome healthy so that you're absorbing also all the nutrients that you need. And as you said, Linda, with the exercise, if you're the sort of person that is a stress head, what you tend to probably like is those real HIIT sessions. You know, doing stuff that's fast paced, jumping, that sort of stuff. And unfortunately, that really revs the adrenals again. So you need to learn to do different types of exercise during perimenopause and menopause, where you're not getting the cortisol like flicks in your bloodstream, because it does steal the hormones that could have become estrogen and progesterone naturally, then goes into manufacturing cortisol. And you just end up so depleted and adrenally depleted. So finding a different form of exercise, you say weight bearing, using actual physical weights as part of your exercise program, can get your heart rate up, but without getting your cortisol levels up.
So it's learning just a different way of being, and it's not worse. And in fact, it's extraordinarily empowering, I think, when you start to learn about how our bodies operate and that we are in a different phase. The beauty about perimenopause and going through menopause is that we're a lot wiser. Like, we've lived decades now and we've accumulated a lot of wisdom. Most of the time we've had our kids, we're sort of out of that immediate, like, nothing else matters apart from getting little Johnny to swimming and making sure little Beryl has her, you know, five vegetables a day, blah, blah, blah. We're kind of a little bit out of that stage of focusing on everybody else. And we're starting to be able to say, what about me? And, you know, I am important too. And starting to realize that our health, as I always say, is our wealth. Like, literally nothing else matters. It drives me crazy when I talk to people who say, I'm too busy with work to do yoga, or I'm too busy with, I'm just too busy. I'm running the whole time and I can't do yoga. I'm like, my God, if you do not stop and look after this body, you know, this temple that we are in for this lifetime, if you ignore all the red flags, the leaking, the headaches, the pains, your vehicle will break down. And it does not matter how much money you've got. It does not matter if you've got a second holiday home. It does not matter if you've got a big fat pension plan. If your body has broken down because you haven't cared for it, then nothing else matters really, does it? So that's why I think it's it's absolutely essential to not ignore the like I say, the red flags that your body's giving you at this stage.
I had a lecture with a cardiologist once, and he obviously saw a lot of people dying of stress, essentially, you know, people having heart attacks because of a personality, you know, that's the way they stressed about stuff. And he gave us an analogy that I use so much with patients. He says, in life, you've got three balls, but two glass balls and one rubber ball. And those three balls are your health, your relationships, and your career. And you have to juggle these balls, and only one of them can drop and be picked up without it being shattered to bits. Which one is it? And I tell you, the patient's sitting there going, and they literally physically hold these balls and they go, which ball can I break, you know? And people will tell me health is the rubber ball, you know, or their relationships are the rubber ball. So you go through the divorce and you go through the cancer, as long as your career's okay, you know, as long as your job's still on track, you know? And I can't believe how often I see this, but we act as if it is a glass ball. We all act as if the job we do can't be changed to something else, can't be, you know, a different pathway, you know?
Oh, I love that.
It all comes from a survival thing, but I promise you, when your health is broken, it takes a lot. I mean, I've had to do this myself, you know? It takes a lot of commitment to pick that back up and put it back to some semblance of what it was before. Your relationships are the same. If you've been through a divorce, and I've been there, you know, your relationships are forever irrevocably changed, but your career can change. It can change. It can bounce. It's a rubber ball. And that's such a key thing to recognize if you are a career-based person and, you know, you do get stressed about that stuff.
That is a great pearl of wisdom right there. It really is. Ladies, if there's any questions that you want to just put into the chat box, we've just got a few minutes left of the session. I'm going to be doing these lunch and learn sessions weekly and inviting various different people to come and chat. And over the next month or so, I'm probably going to keep it around, you know, all of these topics that we've just kind of introduced today. So there'll be other opportunities to talk and to share more information, especially around things like diet, what you can be doing with your diet. And I think it'd be nice to do a whole session just on pelvic floor issues, which Irene, if you wouldn't mind coming back for that one.
No worries.
That would be amazing. But yeah, ladies, if there's anything you're like, oh my goodness me, that was a bit weird, I'd need to know more about that, then do put it in the chat box. Looks like you're all good. All righty. Excellent. Okay, so the main thing really, the summary is that perimenopause is a natural stage of life. We are all going to go through it. 51% of the world's population will go through perimenopause and then menopause itself. About 80% of women will have some form of symptoms and some of them will be derailed by these symptoms. There's only about 20% of women who just sail through without any issues whatsoever. So if you're one of those 80%, do not worry, you're not alone. There's an enormous amount that can be done. And don't think that you're going crazy, because you're not. You're simply a woman who is still alive and, you know, is now hopefully going to be able to start focusing on herself and getting really well and balanced and healthy, so that the next 30, 40, maybe even 50 years of your life are enjoyable. Yeah? Fantastic.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great rest of your day. And we will be back for more another time.
Thanks for having me, Linda. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thanks so much for joining, guys. Bye.
Bye.